Housing prices up.
Consumer confidence down. Hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York.
And I'm Jeff Horwich in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Midday Update for Tuesday, August 28th. Coming up, big company Unilever makes all kinds of products that we see and use every day. It's talking about selling to people in Southern Europe as if they were from developing countries. That's an interesting topic, and we'll talk a little more about that.
Also, as Isaac barrels toward the Gulf Coast, we'll talk about the effect it's already having in the oil markets. That's coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
First, the latest news on the housing market, which comes today from the S&P Case-Shiller Index. U.S. home prices rose almost 1% in June, more than expected. It's the fifth month in a row home prices have increased, and forecasters expect them to keep rising. Here's Marketplace's Mark Garrison.
The S&P Case-Shiller Home Price Index is an average of 20 American cities. Rosemary Scanlon is dean of NYU's Shack Institute of Real Estate. She says the index gives an important national snapshot, but not the full picture.
Regional numbers are extremely different and important to look at.
To give you a taste of just how different, recent yearly data show Phoenix shot up 11.5%, while Atlanta dropped 14.5%. All real estate may be local, but getting the loan to buy a home may not be. Andrew Jakobovics is with the affordable housing nonprofit Enterprise Community Partners.
Particularly now that we're seeing consolidation among the biggest banks that are doing the mortgage lending, there isn't really much indication that credit flows differently in different markets.
So no matter what's going on with housing in your area, you'll still need stellar credentials to get a loan. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
The Conference Board says consumer confidence unexpectedly fell in the first part of August. It is now at its lowest level since November 2011. Concerns about jobs seem to be the main culprit. Later this week, we'll get a reading on consumer sentiment. And both of those are basically a fancy way of saying, how do you feel about the economy? Here's reporter Dan Bobkoff.
Maybe it came in the mail or a call at dinner. A survey asking questions like, do you think this is a good time to buy a car or go on vacation? And is the economy getting better? Each month, both surveys distill the answers into a measure of our economic mood. Gus Fauché is the senior economist at PNC Financial Services, and he says the public is pretty good at seeing the present state of things, but
I don't get the indication that consumers are particularly good prognosticators about what's going to be happening 6 months from now or a year from now.
He says consumer confidence can signal turning points in the economy before they show up elsewhere. It's also a factor companies like dealership chain AutoNation use to make business decisions. But Senior Vice President Mark Cannon says companies like his have to look beyond consumer feelings.
What's happening in real estate? What's happening in what folks are buying? What are gas prices?
Lucky for Cannon, much of that data also comes out this week. In New York, I'm Dan Bobkoff from Marketplace.
Many of us here in the U.S. might not immediately recognize the name of the European company Unilever, but it owns brands like Hellmann's, Lipton, Vaseline, Dove. Unilever is even more dominant in Europe. And Unilever's top European official said something kind of provocative in a new interview with the Financial Times Deutschland. He said, poverty has come back to Southern Europe, and the company will approach consumers there using techniques from developing countries. Gerard Reich is a food and beverage analyst with ING in Amsterdam. Hello.
Hello.
What are some of these techniques that Unilever has developed from selling in other parts of the world?
Well, it's in fact quite simple. They are reducing the packaging sizes of several of their successful products in order to make the products more affordable for people who go shopping with small money in their pocket.
So if people want laundry detergent, say, they're not going to buy the giant tub of Unilever-made laundry detergent. They're going to buy, what, just a few days' worth?
Yes, they will buy for, let's say, for 5 days and not for the full package. That is something that they have already developed for a long time in Asia. There is demand for smaller packages and for smaller purchases.
Worth pointing out, perhaps, that there is something paradoxical here because, of course, buying in bulk is a better value over the long term, right?
Completely right. But it's all about liquidity in the pockets for a certain group of people who do not have easy access nowadays to liquidity because they need money for hospitals, etc.
We are not exactly having boom times over here in the U.S. Are any of these things applicable for Unilever with its U.S. consumers?
Yes, maybe it is. What Unilever said on this is when we can be successful in Europe with this kind of techniques, we can be successful everywhere. So this can be adopted to every country where there is some kind of increasing poverty because of the need for more austerity in government. That will also one time happen in the U.S., I think.
Gerard Reich is a food and beverage analyst with ING in Amsterdam. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Forecasters say Tropical Storm Isaac is on the verge of becoming a hurricane, and it's expected to hit the Louisiana coast as soon as tonight. But the storm has already shut down offshore oil rigs in the Gulf, as Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
The energy companies are not taking any chances. They've shut down three-quarters of oil production and half the natural gas output from the Gulf. And they've closed a great swathe of the region's refining capacity. But the weather forecasters have toned down their predictions. Isaac is not expected to be as strong as Katrina 7 years ago. Nick McGregor, an oil analyst with stockbrokers Redmayne Bentley, says the oil markets are taking Isaac in their stride.
The industry and traders are used to seeing this capacity go offline for temporary periods for safety reasons when hurricane season is in hand. And they are relatively confident that this production tends to come back online fairly quickly thereafter.
But he says the traders are not complacent. Hurricanes are unpredictable. Everyone knows that Isaac could do massive damage to oil and gas output. Katrina knocked out 4.5 million barrels of refined oil a day. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Well, here at Marketplace, our mission is to make business and economic news understandable. And one of our best weapons is one of our senior producers, a guy named Paddy Hirsch. He helps explain everything from collateralized debt obligations to euro bonds by drawing pictures on a whiteboard and then putting those videos up at marketplace.org. Well, Paddy has just written a book called Man Versus Markets, Economics Explained Plain and Simple. And he's here now to talk about it. Hi, Paddy.
Hello, Jeremy.
Well, so why are the markets so mystifying?
Well, I think the markets are mystifying for a number of reasons, but language is one of them. You know, the Wall Street has this great lexicon that is almost impenetrable. It sounds like a black art when these guys are talking about it.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. But I think the second thing is that there's almost an effort made by people on Wall Street to try and create this idea of themselves doing something that's really incredibly special and incredibly difficult to understand. And as a result, people who are reading the newspapers find it very, very difficult to work out what's going on a lot of the time.
Well, let's focus on one of the examples in your book. You talk about swaps, which are a very complex thing on Wall Street, but you use Jell-O to get us to understand. What do swaps have to do with Jell-O, Patty?
Well, swaps are extremely complicated when they're done on Wall Street, but at their essence, they're essentially very, very simple. So a swap is what it sounds like. It's when you swap one thing for another. So, for example, if you have, if you're getting the school menu and you get Jell-O every day, and your buddy across the table, he's got the another menu that gets something varied every day, like, you know, maybe he gets ice cream one day and cake the next. You might say, I want more variety. He wants Jell-O every day. I'll just swap so we can swap our menus. And that's essentially what people do in these, whether it be an interest rate swap or a credit default swap. They're exchanging one thing for another in order to get – one person wants certainty, another person wants variety, and that's essentially what the swaps do.
And why is it important for ordinary people to understand what a swap is?
Well, it might not necessarily be important for them to understand unless they want to know. But if you're a person on Main Street and you're reading the newspaper and you want to know what this credit default swap is that seems to have brought down the entire financial system, you need to start somewhere.
Do you think that this complicated economy that we are part of is a sign of maturity, or would we be better off keeping things simple?
I think it is a sign of maturity in one way. It means that, you know, people are working terrifically hard on trying to find ways to make money from the financial system, and that's a sign of maturity. But on the other hand, it's almost like an adolescent who's growing out of his clothes. Okay, this adolescent is becoming taller and taller and taller all the time, getting stronger and stronger, but he's not got any new clothes, so he's bursting out of his shorts and his T-shirt. Okay, right. He needs new clothes. So we have a system where people are incredibly smart. They're coming up with all of these new ideas, these financial innovations, but our regulatory system is not keeping pace. And as a result, we run into all sorts of problems all the time.
Paddy Hirsch is the author of Man Versus Markets, Economics Explained Plain and Simple. He's also, of course, our whiteboard guru here at Marketplace and the senior producer of Personal Finance at Marketplace. Paddy, thanks so much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Jeremy.
Well, in Burlington, Vermont, Jeff, a group of three Canadian tourists were eating at a seafood restaurant recently.
Uh-huh.
And after they were done, they noticed there was an unusual line item on their bill, an 18% tip. And of course, you know, you get those sometimes added on when there are parties of five or six or more, but
That's right.
three people, it seems a little weird. Turns out the reason was that they were speaking French, and therefore they were thought to be Canadians who would not tip well. So the
right.
restaurant just went ahead and added on a foreigner's tax.
Is that a thing with Canadians that they don't?
I guess that maybe. Well, you know, a lot of other countries they don't tip as well as we do in the United States.
Sure.
But according to ABC News, the practice is very common, a way to combat low tips in Burlington, where waiters make just $4.10 an hour before tips, and over the border in Quebec, they make more like $8.50 an hour before tips. So it's a different culture, I guess.
We've had a couple of stories about Canadians crossing the border and making trouble lately, right?
Those Canadians.
Crossing
gotta
over
watch
to,
out for them.
to shop in Washington and mobbing, was it the Costco parking lot, I think?
Yeah, exactly.
In Washington
That's right.
State.
They love using those Canadian dollars that are very valuable right now.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
Well, after a one-day delay because of Tropical Storm Isaac, the Republican National Convention is expected to kick off today in Tampa. And one key focus for the GOP this year will be Latino voters. In 2004, President George W. Bush won about half of the Hispanic vote nationwide. But in 2008, President Obama attracted about two-thirds. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports that in Tampa this week, the GOP is hoping to turn that around.
Tonight, Texas senatorial candidate Ted Cruz will speak at the convention. He's likely to repeat past comments indicting the Democratic Party.
More and more government spending, higher and higher debt, more government control of the economy in our lives.
For Cruz, the Republican Party represents
getting back to limited government, free market principles, individual liberty in the Constitution.
Cruz is the face of a new breed of Republican. He's a Tea Party favorite and Hispanic, the son of immigrants from Cuba.
I think that you're going to see a convention that is going to be much more open to Hispanics.
That's Juan Hernandez, co-founder of the Hispanic Republicans of Texas. He says the Texas delegation will promote a softer approach to immigration policy.
There was a proposal in favor of creating enough visas for the undocumented.
But the party's tough official immigration platform has turned off many Latino voters. Still, the party sees potential since Hispanics share a lot in common with the conservative right. Gary Segura is the founder of a private polling firm called Latino Decisions.
You've got a community that's religiously observant, incredibly family-oriented, very entrepreneurial, starting businesses left and right, and believe in self-reliance, then in a conventional sense, that sounds Republican.
These traits once led Ronald Reagan to say, Latinos are Republicans, they just don't know it yet. But Segura says there's a catch.
Those very same people don't think religion belongs in the ballot box, and those very same people think that government has to have an active role in solving economic problems.
Segura says Ronald Reagan was great with a quote, but in this case, he didn't know what he was talking about. Polls show that Hispanic support for Mitt Romney is down to around 25%. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
The Wall Street Journal this morning reports high-caffeine energy drinks are the latest target for investigators in New York. The state's attorney general has issued subpoenas to Monster Beverage, Pepsi, which makes AMP, and Living Essentials, which makes those little five-hour energy shots. All three companies declined to comment on the story. Americans are slamming these things back. Sales of energy drinks rose 16% last year. But New York officials suspect there's some false advertising going on. Dr. Todd Cooperman recently conducted his own independent chemical analysis of some popular energy drinks for the site ConsumerLab.com. Good to talk with you.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me on.
The New York AG apparently is concerned consumers aren't getting the whole story from what's on a can of some energy drinks. First of all, caffeine content. What's the potential problem there?
These products often don't tell you how much caffeine is really in them. You're getting a lot of caffeine from these products, but you're also getting high amounts of vitamins, more than you really need. For example, you may be getting 40 to 200 times the amount of certain B vitamins that you require. I think they put these in because they're really borrowing science, which shows that B vitamins help you release energy from food. But you only need a small amount, and most people have an adequate amount.
False advertising, allegedly, anyway, is one thing. Could anything here be dangerous?
If you're taking too many of these bottles, it can be dangerous because you are increasing your risk for various types of toxicity from the vitamins that they're putting in these products.
There's also a question about all of the additives that these drinks advertise. Ginseng, vitamin B, something called taurine. What's the potential problem around those legally?
Right. Legally, I'm not sure that there's really a problem because it's very loose in terms of regulations of supplements. A company can put in really whatever they want into a product. They could give you 1,000, 10,000 times the amount of a certain vitamin. And it's really up to you to know what's appropriate.
If you do a web search this morning looking for the term energy drinks, you will also turn up a study from just the other day out of Italy saying that these things are actually good for your heart. At the very least, we can say that this is a product with a lot of questions around it still, right?
Oh, absolutely. You don't really know what's in these products. As we said with the caffeine, the products don't even tell you the amount that's in there. So, you know, unless you have a laboratory at home, you're not going to know how much caffeine you're getting. And what we've learned at Consumer Lab is that you're getting a lot more than you think.
Dr. Todd Cooperman is president of Consumer Lab. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
And finally, Jeremy, just a kind of a heartwarming little story to wind things up. A garbage man in New York City, works for the Parks Department, gets some credit today for digging deep, going well beyond the call of duty. And here's the little tale. The New York Daily News says Gary Gaddis found a note taped to his garbage truck yesterday, this was, from a woman who was desperate to find a lost wedding ring. She was pretty sure it had slipped into the trash at a park near her home. She'd been doing some crafts with some kids, I guess, and they were using slippery stuff, and she threw it all away in the park. So rather than send this poor woman or allow this woman, this is what she wanted to do, to go to the dump and search through the garbage, Gary headed there. He somehow managed to track down this bag of garbage at the dump.
Wow.
It's kind of amazing. And just started digging through it, and he found that ring.
Wow.
Yeah, he says he did it, went to all that trouble because he could really tell from the note, I guess, and I think he might have called her on the phone. He could really tell the couple were in love.
Well, there you go. So you can always put a note on the garbage truck if you need something that you accidentally threw away. That's the lesson of that story.
They are there for you. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeff Horwich.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. This is the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.